Hi there, you're listening to WXYC Chapel Hill. We are wrapping up a track from Acceptor. If I'm not mistaken, this is If I Were You, which was recorded live in New York City. This is their first full-length, and it is out on 5 Rue Christine. But hey, today we have a special treat. The first episode of this season's Global Music Show is about to get underway. We'll be speaking about immigration into the United States from various places in Latin America, especially in Mexico. And excuse me, my guest is Hannah Gill. Is that right? How are you doing?
I'm great, Kevin. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be lots of fun playing border music with you and listening to what you have to say. What do you do here at the university, and why are you coming to speak to us today? Maybe.
Well, I actually am from North Carolina, and I went to UNC Chapel Hill. Right now, I'm an anthropologist, and I work at the University Center for International Studies, and I've been there for a couple years, and I'm a research associate there, and we've been working on a project. We call it the Celaya Project. It's a project about Mexican migration to North Carolina. And we just put out a publication called Going to Carolina del Norte, Narrating Mexican Migrant Experiences. And it's basically a book of oral histories of immigrants from the state of Guanajuato, Mexico, who are living in Carrboro. So that's just finished up.
Okay. And the narratives in there, I guess, what's sort of the overall... I mean, I'm sure that the narratives are incredibly diverse, but is there an overall... I guess
like
maybe some
or
assumptions or themes, mm-hmm. or things that people have experienced coming to Orange County that are sort of like substantially, like we can say that mm-hmm. people who come here experience A, B, and C usually?
Sure, yeah. Well, I mean, you're right, it is a very diverse group, but a lot of the, mainly our immigrant population now, we're seeing in North Carolina a lot of undocumented young male Mexicans, and the state of Guanajuato is the largest, the source community for the majority of immigrants in Orange County are coming from. And, you know, one of the cool things about this project is we were able to talk to people about why they came to North Carolina in the first place. And for a lot of people, it was really difficult for them to make a living in their hometowns in Guanajuato. And coming to North Carolina, they could make seven times as much for the same kind of job. Let's say they were an agricultural laborer. Well, here they could make, instead of making $2.50 a day, which is usually what people make in Mexico, and then you have to think about a pair of New Balance tennis shoes cost the same there as it does here. You know, you're working like months just to buy a pair of shoes. So coming here, they have, you know, they can make so much more money.
Obvious financial benefit,
right,
to working in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any particular reason that Orange County seems to be sort of like a hub for Mexican immigration?
Well, there are folks. Yeah, there are folks all over North Carolina. It's not just in Orange County, but the Triangle area is a very attractive place for people to come because our economy is good in this part of the state. There are a lot of jobs. Immigrants are coming mostly to work in like the construction industry, the service industry. We've got RTP, it's growing. That's providing a lot of new restaurants, and people need people to clean their houses. And just look here on the UNC campus, we have major building projects where a lot, I'd say probably the majority of people working in on these building sites are probably from Mexico. So this is just a good area to be in. And then once you start having people coming over, then, you know, you establish these migrant networks, and people come to join their families and raise a family here. So,
excellent. Does the university being in Chapel Hill and being in Orange County, does that offer, I guess, any... I guess what I'm asking, is there any added incentive to mm-hmm. being in a college town as opposed to elsewhere in a more rural area?
Well, if I was going to be an immigrant, it's a much more diverse community, and you're not going to encounter the same sort of stereotypes in this area that you'd encounter, say, in my home county of Alamance. But certainly there's no incentive for education because most immigrants aren't able to access the sort of higher education. If you're the child of an undocumented immigrant, you know, you can't go to school here. I mean, you can't, there's no tuition incentives.
Right.
So there's that's not really a draw, but.
Cool. Well, I guess what I'd like to do now is sort of change gears and listen to some music. This is a corrido, a Mexican-American ballad that I believe was recorded in 1929, although we can probably talk more about this in a minute. Let's listen to some music. These are some of the first recordings made available on compact disc in the United States after Arhuli sort of took over the folk lyric back catalog of old 78s and 45s. This is going to be a song by the Hermanos Bañuelos, and it's El Deportado, which ties into what we're talking about today. So hopefully we can maybe play a few corridos, talk about the history of the genre of border music, and talk a little bit more about what it means to be an immigrant in the United States. Today from Mexico. My guest is Hannah Gill, and this is WXYC Chapel Hill.
Voy a contarle, señores, voy a contarle, señores, todo lo que yo sufrí. Desde que dejé mi patria por venir a este país. Serían las 10 de la noche, serían las 10 de la noche, comenzó un tren a silbar. Oí que dijo mi madre, ahí viene ese tren ingrato que a mi hijo se va. Adiós, mi madre querida, échame su bendición. Yo me voy al extranjero, yo me voy al extranjero, donde no hay revolución. Corre, corre, maquinita, corre, corre, maquinita, vámonos de la estación. No quiero ver a mi madre llorar por su hijo querido, por su hijo del corazón. Al fin sonó la campana, al fin sonó la campana, dos silbidos pegó el tren. No lloren mis compañeros, no lloren mis compañeros, que me hacen llorar también. Pasamos pronto Jalisco, pasamos pronto Jalisco, ay qué fuerte corría el tren. La Piedad, luego Irapuato, Silao, luego La Chona y Aguascalientes también. Al recordar esas horas, al recordar esas horas, me palpita el corazón. Cuando debí si a lo lejos, cuando debí si a lo lejos, de cementado Torreón. Cuando Chihuahua pasamos, cuando Chihuahua pasamos, se notó gran confusión. Los empleados de la aduana, los empleados de la aduana, que pasaban revisión.
Thank you. a Juárez, llegamos por fin a Juárez, y allí fue mi apuración. ¿Qué onde vas? ¿Qué de onde vienes? ¿Qué cuánto dinero tienes para entrar a esta nación? Señores, traigo dinero. Señores, traigo dinero para poder emigrar. Tu dinero nada vale, tu dinero nada vale, te tenemos que bañar. Ay, mis paisanos queridos, ay, mis paisanos queridos, yo les platico no más. Que me estaban dando ganas, que me estaban dando ganas de volverme para atrás. Crucé por fin la frontera, crucé por fin la frontera, y en un reenganche salí. Ay, mis queridos paisanos, ay, mis queridos paisanos, fue mucho lo que sufrí. Los güeros son muy maloras, los güeros son muy maloras, se valen de la ocasión. Y a todos los mexicanos, y a todos los mexicanos, nos tratan sin compasión. Hoy traen la gran polvadera, hoy traen la gran polvadera, y sin consideración. Mujeres, niños y ancianos los llevan a la frontera, nos echan de esta nación. Adiós, paisanos queridos, adiós, paisanos queridos, ya nos van a deportar. Pero no somos bandidos, pero no somos bandidos, venimos a camellar. Los espero allá en mi tierra, los espero allá en mi tierra, ya no hay más revolución. Vámonos, cuates queridos, seremos bien recibidos en nuestra bella nación.
Noche del 8 de julio del año de 31. Soy contento, iban pa' la capital a pasar sus vacaciones en nuestra tierra natal. Por Oklahoma pasaron un día de hermosa mañana, ansiosos de regresar a la tierra michoacana. En su carro iban corriendo con rapidez moderada, imaginar siquiera que les tendían la emboscada. En un pueblo de Oklahoma pararon pa' descansar. Se acercaron dos cheriles jefes con intención de matar. Estás por pueblo chiquito, de triste recordación. Allí perdieron la vida, los mataron a traición. Los cherifes se acercaron, sin decirles agua baja, y los asesinaron. En México la noticia causó gran indignación. Se levantaron protestas en toda nuestra nación. La prensa de San Antonio, la gran noticia nos daba, que en las moras los bolillos el jurado los juzgaba. El día que fueron juzgados, con un premio de su crimen, después fueron libertados. Uno de los estudiantes que murió como valiente era sobrino carnal de nuestro gran presidente. Los jueces y los jurados de México se burlaron, y a sus paisanos sherifes luego, luego libertaron. Los llevaron con grandes pompas y honores. Luego allí los sepultaron en la tierra de las flores. Los familiares de Rubio estaban muy disgustados, pues los sherifes matones nunca se castigado. Con la nación indignada, nuestro presidente Ortiz ordenó que sus dos hijos salieran de este país. No se quieren conformar y esperan Hoover castigue este sistema de obrar. Los estudiantes mandaban sin dilación cual ninguna. Sus protestas al Dios San por el caso de Oklahoma. Termina este corrido la tragedia de amor. Esperando que algún día vengaremos nuestro honor.
This is WXYC Chapel Hill. We just wrapped up hearing from Silvano Ramos y Ortega, La Tragedia de Oklahoma. Forgive the pronunciation, please. That comes from an Art Huli retrospective compilation of material that I believe originally was from the Folk Lyric label and was then purchased by Art Huli later on in the late 80s. Silvano Ramos y Ortega. That's from Corridos y Tragedias de la Frontera, first recordings of historic Mexican-American ballads, 1928 to 1937. We heard before that one from the same compilation, Los Hermanos Pañuelos, with parts one and two of El Deportado. We heard, you might have heard four songs there, actually two songs, parts one and two recorded on two separate 78s, and then intended for back-to-back play. So technology there coming a long way and evolving, as do the methods by which immigrants come can cross illegally over the border to the United States. The song that we heard, the first song, El Deportado, he's talking about crossing by train, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that still a thing that happens today?
Today, it's really interesting to play this song and compare it with what's happening today. I mean, people do cross by train today, but they don't do it in a legal way. There are more frequently people cross by walking or by swimming in ways that aren't, because today it's a lot harder to actually come to the United States legally. There aren't enough visas. For the need, the labor need that we have in the United States, we don't give out enough visas for people to actually come here legally. So a lot of people are finding other ways to get here, and they're not really just getting on a train and buying a ticket anymore. So how
else have, I guess, the methods of border crossing, they're not the same, I'm assuming, as they were in 1929. Things have mm-hmm. changed considerably since then. There are now jeeps and you know, Border Patrol has increased in the past few years. How have methods of crossing sort of changed, or maybe geographic routes? Mm-hmm. How is that different now than it would have been at the time that song was recorded?
Well, today we have, I mean, a few important differences in the 20s and the beginning part of the last century. There was a need for Mexicans were recruited directly by industry in the United States to work during World War II. We had the Bracero program, which was men from the United States were fighting in World War II, and so we had a lack of labor, and so a lot of Mexican men were recruited to work in places like California in the agricultural industry. So there was a much more, the borders were also much more loose. Mexicans could engage in sort of cyclical labor migration, come to the United States and work for 6 months, and then they could come back home. Today, we really have a broken immigration system. Even though we still have this need for labor in the United States, our the visas, like I mentioned before, our policies don't reflect the reality of this economic need. So we have fought over the past 15 years. The past two presidential administrations have employed a series of programs that have fortified the border and made it impossible for migrants to cross through their traditional places, which were cities like San Diego, Juarez, which is the subject of this last song that we heard, Laredo in Texas, and Arizona, Nogales, I believe. So all of in these major cities where immigrants used to cross over, now we have, that's where we focused our border control. So immigrants are forced to cross through very hostile terrain, mountains, deserts. And the whole industry of human smuggling is something new that didn't exist in the 1920s, when people could cross in much more easily. So now we have coyotes who smuggle people over, and you have to pay. I mean, if I was wanted to come to the United States, I'd have to pay a coyote about $2,000 for them to navigate this hostile terrain, deserts, mountains, to get to the U.S.
What about river, like guías, guides? I've heard that they can be, I guess their services can be rendered or to help someone cross Rio Grande, for example. I think for like $1 or $2. Or was I mistaken in
Well, $1 or $2,000 maybe. I don't know exactly about the intricacies of the river guides, but I mean river guides are coyotes, just like the guides that cross the deserts with people. There are people on a lot of different steps of the way, and coyotes work together. So perhaps there might be somebody for a certain portion of the trip that would then hand over the pollos, the chickens they call them, to the river guide, and then the river guide would cross them. They could cross over on the river, and then they'd be picked up on the other side by someone else. But I don't know the exact details. But it varies a lot.
Well, that's an intricate system of getting here, definitely. And so when immigrants arrive in places such as Orange County, for example, what, I guess, in preparing the book and in your experience at the University Center for International Studies, what is sort of the, I guess, if you can narrow down a common sort of pattern, is there a pattern of clashing with Anglo values? Or, I mean, I know that listening to these corridos, a lot of them are expressions of Anglo-American and Mexican-American influences and ideals, and this is sort of like a way of dealing with them, and border tragedies and things that do happen to people while crossing. Is there, I guess, what are the sentiments among recent immigrants from Mexico about clashes with Anglo values? Is there sort of, are there any patterns that you found?
I mean, I think we can find a lot of commonalities with what the singer of the past song was saying. When I got to the border, they told me they tried to wash me. They tried to, I wasn't clean enough to come across the border. And I think that points to the sort of stereotypes and misinformation that circulates in popular media in the United States about immigrants coming from different countries, that they're bringing in disease. This is not true. The irony is that most immigrants pick up a lot of diseases in the United States and carry them back to their hometowns, like HIV and STDs and diabetes, that sort of thing. But I think that especially in a place like North Carolina, where we've had up until relatively recently diversity, not a whole lot of diversity besides, blacks and whites. And I think that when immigrants come to North Carolina, I think that they encounter a lot of, there's some hostility that they encounter. And I think it's something that we really need to be talking about and thinking about right now. I mean, how do we receive these new neighbors in our state? How do we acknowledge that they aren't just coming here? We have, as industry in North Carolina, have played a very primary role in actually recruiting them to come to our state. So we have to acknowledge that we are all part of this together. And so it's not an easy answer to how to deal with that. But I think immigrants feel that very keenly, and they are the butt of a lot of bad stereotypes.
One of the bad stereotypes you were mentioning there, one stereotype about, I guess, immigration from Latin America and from Mexico is that it's tied up in the drug smuggling trade. How accurate is that? Is that idea that drugs play a significant role in border crossings?
Well, one of the connections between the drug industry and human smuggling is a lot of, whereas before the past 10 years when we started to really fortify the border, drug dealing and human smuggling were two sort of, were more separate. But now that we have such strong fortifications on the border, it's become such a lucrative thing to smuggle humans that a lot of these drug dealers have actually said, hey, we can make more money smuggling humans, not drugs. And they've gotten involved in this process of humans. So what you have are much more vulnerable migrants. I mean, your average Jose is not bringing drugs into the United States at all. He's just interested in making a little money and sending it home to his family. But the stakes, you know, it's really upped the ante, and now you have these victims, these immigrants who are the victims of these coyotes who are really, you know, now they're
aggressive middlemen.
Right, they're very aggressive, and, you know, if a coyote doesn't get his payment from a family, say, in North Carolina, he'll hold the person hostage in a little, you know, house near the border, and will there have been reports of people being killed, migrants being killed, because the money didn't show up, the payment for getting them across the border never showed up.
Does the U.S. Border Patrol have any involvement in, I guess, prosecuting coyotes to that extent? I mean, mm-hmm. I know they're obviously inevitably, you know, going to be tied up in coyotes taking people across the border, but I don't hear a lot in mainstream media news about things like that happening. Is there like a bit of, I don't want to say an apathetic tone, but is there more of a concern, would you say, with the actual border crossings than with, I guess, immigrants once they're mm-hmm. once they're closer, like along the East Coast or maybe even in the North? Or
right, I mean, okay, so I'm trying to understand your question. Like, it, what sort of, well,
to what extent does the U.S. Border Patrol concern itself with the line between Mexico and the United States, mm-hmm. as opposed to
outside, more
long term? You know, like you said,
sure,
with
okay.
people being held hostage, for example, maybe in mm-hmm. northern Arizona.
Well, I think one of the things that we sometimes don't realize, I've read a really interesting book about this, is a lot of people who have worked, border patrol agents who have worked in these areas along the Mexican-U.S. border, they know what's going on. I mean, they know who the players are. They know, and they have priorities, obviously. I mean, they're interested in busting the coyotes more than they're interested in busting the, you know, the
people
mines that are
work.
Going with these more than they're interested in busting the, you know, the
people
migrants that are going
work.
With them. And they, I think they're, is a lot more attention. I mean, if you are an illegal immigrant or you're an undocumented immigrant, which is a better way to say that, and you have a larger chance of probably being pulled over if you're driving in Texas than you do in being asked to see your papers than if you were in Pennsylvania. But increasingly that is changing, and communities in North Carolina, in all up and down the East Coast, are now petitioning the federal government to have their sheriffs deputized so that they can actually deport directly. This is happening in Alamance County right now.
Wow.
So I think more and more the focus on undocumented immigrants is leaving the border area and moving towards the more peripheral areas of our country, you know, like in non-traditional areas of immigration. So.
All right.
And I should also point out that in terms of, you know, the connection of drugs and immigration, it's really important for people to understand that, like I said before, your average immigrant is not involved in dealing drugs. They're not coming to the United States to deal drugs. They're truly just trying to make some money, you know, building your house or cleaning your house or working, you know, taking care of your grandparent in the hospital. It's a lot of people make that mistake in connecting the two, and we have to think about the fact that also we have the demand for drugs among youth in the United States is just as big a part of the process of the problem of drugs than it is the people who supply it, who are maybe coming from certain countries in Latin America.
Now, one thing that might sort of serve to, I guess, bolster those stereotypes is the fact that the corrido, the subject matter of corridos has sort of not entirely shifted, but there's been a strong prevalence, especially since the 1970s, of these frontier ballads, Mexican-American ballads, dealing with the drug trade and glamorizing the drug trade. I know that in Mexico in the past few years, and I mean, since the existence of the narco corrido, there's been sort of you know, authorities have sort of antagonized musicians and people who they accuse have glamorized the drug trade and drug smuggling. What I'd like to do is listen to a couple older corridos, narco corridos, as they're called, and maybe we can, we want to hear, what is this, the name of this one is Contrabando del Paso, by Luis Hernandez and Leonardo Cifuentes. So my guest today is Hannah Gill of the University Center for International Studies. Thank you so much for being with us. We're talking about Mexican-American immigration and the music that is inspired by that experience.
Ya fiesta de agosto, estábamos desesperados, que nos sacarán del paso para que anden mancornados. Nos sacaron de la corte a las 8 de la noche, nos llevaron por el tipo, nos montaron en un coche. Yo dirijo mi mirada por toda la estación a mi madre idolatrada, pedirle su bendición. Y mi madre me esperaba, ni siquiera mi mujer. Adiós todos mis amigos cuando los volví a ver. Ya viene silbando el tren, ya no tardará en llegar. Les dije a mis compañeros que no fueran a llorar. Ya voy a tomar el tren, me convierto a un canto fuerte. Ya no vuelvo al contrabando porque tengo mala suerte. Comienza a andar el tren, a replicar la campana. Le pregunto a Mr. Gil que si vamos a Luciana. Mr. Gil con su risita me contesta, no señor, pactaremos de Luciana derechito a Levenbor. Corre, corre, maquinista, suéltale todo el vapor, anda a dejar los fonditos hasta el plan del elevador. Yo les digo a mis amigos que salgan a experimentar, que le entrena el contrabando a ver dónde van a dar.
You're going to listen to Los Pingüinos del Norte on WXYC Chapel Hill.
Sucedido por el chirife mayor. ganar 10,000 pesos que les daba.
This is the remix of on WXYC Chapel Hill. We'll attend to these technical difficulties. Global Music Show will be right back.
Son de muy finos metales, las muchachas que hay ahí son aceitunas cordiales. Hay pilas llenas de aceite, llenas y sin derramar. Vuelan los a todos lados con sal, pimienta y su sal. ¿Qué dices, amigo? Vamos a ver si dicen verdad. Si es verdad de lo que dicen, nos quedamos por allá.
This is WXYCFM. We're listening to, just there, from the Arhuli compilation, Corridos and Tragedias de la Frontera, which I guess was compiled in 1994, containing folk lyric material, originally recorded for folk lyric, or put out by them, I guess I should say. Mostly from 78's there, historic Mexican-American ballads, documenting the border crossing experience and things that have happened to immigrants while that's happening. And before, I guess we heard, before La Ciudad de... could you do this for me? I'm scared here. Of
which one is it?
Number 5 on the first disc.
La Ciudad de Oaxaca.
That's what I didn't know how to do that convincingly.
Oaxaca. No, No sé.
Okay. Before that, Los Pingüinos del Norte, Gregorio Cortez was the track we heard, which is actually a pretty interesting corrido, which is not fictional. That's about a man who in 1901 was arrested for murder as well as stealing a horse and managed to elude the Texas Rangers temporarily, thereby becoming a hero for many immigrants crossing, and became sort of a essential corrido, which is covered many times by many people. Los Pingüinos del Norte there, I believe that is from 1970 and was recorded in a cantina somewhere in an unknown location. Before that, starting off that set, we heard an old Narco Corrido from Arjuli's Roots of the Narco Corrido CD. We heard Contrabando del Paso, and that catches you up on what we've been playing for the past few minutes. My guest is Hannah Gill from the University Center for International Studies here at UNC Chapel Hill. Thank you for being with us today. We do appreciate you talking to us.
Thanks.
One of the things we were talking about while we were listening to the Narco Corridos is that, well, we mentioned how they've been sort of, I guess, demonized by Mexican authorities and people who, conservative groups, who feel that they're rebellious and glamorizing the drug trade. And you said something interesting, which is that it's sort of like a lot of negative attention that hip-hop music has gotten here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
How do they tie into each other, and how, I guess, how is the Narco Corrido?
How can we draw a parallel between that and say?
That's exactly
music?
What I was trying. That's exactly what I was trying to ask you.
Well, it just like listening to rap music. I mean, just because you listen to rap doesn't mean you are necessarily believe in or practice the sort of things that rappers do or talk about or sing about. In the same way that, you know, people like Narco Corridos because they're good, they sound good, they're fun, it's funny to hear their stories of, you know, in San Antonio on 5th of August in 1999, so-and-so did this and that, and this is what went down, and it's really entertaining just to hear the story of what went down, and it's usually something pretty dramatic because we're dealing with drugs and,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and it's also kind of fun to put yourself in kind of a badass mentality for
right.
a little while.
Right, and I think, you know, maybe in a small way that some immigrants, while they may not be involved in drugs themselves, maybe they identify a little bit with people who are targeted by, you know, by the police or the government, or who, you know, have to walk down the street and get suspicious looks from other people, you know, if you're not white and you live in the South, you know, you get a lot of scrutiny, and sometimes it's pretty negative. So I think that they identify with that in a way, you know, and so that's, yeah.
That answers my question quite well. Thank you. Listener land, people in listener land, if you have a question for Hannah, maybe about recent immigrant experiences in Orange County, border crossings, if you want to talk about the music a little bit, why don't you give us a call here at 919-962-8989, and we'll take questions for the next couple minutes until right after 6 p.m. when music from many other places will be with you. Don't be shy and give us a call. Maybe maybe there'll be an incentive. All right. It doesn't look like we're having much attention from the phone. I did want to ask you one thing, which is about reading up about the Chicano movement in Southern California and on, I guess, Pachuco culture of the 1950s. It seems like that characterizes, I guess, young Mexican-American subculture, I guess, of that time is sort of an identity clash with both like traditional Mexican values and what they've experienced in America. Do you think that such like identity clashes I mean, obviously, I'm imagining they're still happening today, but in what ways has that, have the ideals shifted, and in what ways has the compromise sort of shifted, mm-hmm. if that makes sense?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think that the children of immigrants who are growing up in the United States, I mean, they still obviously have these identity issues that they had, that their parents had. One interesting thing, we're seeing more of that now because the East Coast and the Southeast is a new immigration site, whereas the Chicano movement developed out of California, and you're looking at three generations of Mexicans migrating to that area and having children who have grown up and sought out a way to express themselves and their identity, their conflicting values. Their parents want them to behave one way, and then they're in the United States and they're being raised in a different way. They're learning new things in school that may conflict with what their parents have taught them. And so what we're seeing is that's happening now, now that we have this new immigration to North Carolina. These are a lot of the same issues. And one interesting outlet for a lot of the youth here now are the genre of music reggaeton, which is coming out of the Caribbean, Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, and it's interesting to see how that sort of Caribbean style music is sort of now dominating the Latino cultural space in the United States, and also in these countries as well. I mean, a lot of folks in Mexico listen to Tego Calderon and all of these reggaeton artists. And this is also, it's a music of, it's a rebellious music. If you listen to a reggaeton song, if you can understand it, you'll probably turn like five shades
a little
of
shocked.
Blushing. You know, you don't want like your kids to listen to this stuff. Absolutely. People have these similar issues. I mean, of course it's a different society now.
The early 1960s.
Absolutely. Yeah.
One final question then. The phones are not giving us much love, but it's getting close to the end, and I did want to ask you, I guess it's sort of like there's this diaspora of Mexican-American immigrants, and there's legislation that's proposed, it seems like every year now, so there's new immigration debates, and the Mexican-American vote is frequently sought after more and more as that population grows. I guess what I'm asking is, where do we stand? What is the status quo with immigration, and what can, I guess, how do you think people are responding to this population, and how do you think, like, what direction do you think Anglo attitudes should direction should that take?
Well, we are in a very crucial time right now, especially in North Carolina, because this is the time at which we are thinking about our legislation. We're forming laws and policies that directly impact the immigrants that are coming here. And what is happening in North Carolina is that we have had a trend of a very anti-immigrant sentiment. I mean, the role of radio programs has been very large in defeating a lot of the legislation that's been passed or that has been attempted to be passed in the past couple years. For example, the legislation for children of undocumented immigrants going to college having tuition.
I'm sorry,
tuition.
Did you say radio programs?
Yeah, radio programs, like the whole that was defeated by, well, certain kinds of radio programs.
Okay.
not probably WXYC, of course, but radio programs, popular radio programs like talk shows that have a conservative bent, that are interested in, like, part of the reason that this past legislation was defeated was because there was a large public backlash. People were calling their senators, and they were encouraged by radio programs to call their senators and tell them, don't support this legislation. We don't agree with, giving undocumented immigrants, the children of undocumented immigrants, in-state tuition. It's a very complex topic, but so I kind of lost my train of thought.
That's okay. Thank you.
it's a complex topic. That
it's a very complex topic, which has a number of complex directions, which could unfold in a very complex way. But the general sentiment I'm gathering from you is that this is a crucial time in terms of immigration policy.
It's important right now that we educate ourselves about the facts of what's actually happening. When they proposed this so-called amnesty, this wasn't actually an amnesty. This was people who have lived in the country for more than 5 years would had to pay back fines would be allowed to apply for a visa status, and that would have been given them the opportunity to be here legally. But this is something that they'd have to pay fines, they'd have to pay for being a resident of the United States. So people, I think it's up to us to educate ourselves, to be informed about the realities of what's happening with immigration. Don't just believe the sound bites that you hear in the media, because it's a lot more complex than that, and politicians want to kind of pull the wool over your eyes for political reasons. So,
well, thank you very much for helping us to understand these issues. My guest today is Hannah Gill of the University Center for International Studies. We've been talking about the Mexican-American immigration experience and the music inspired by it. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Appreciate it.
All right. More music on the way right now. If I'm not mistaken, this has nothing to do with the Mexican-American diaspora, does
it? Nothing
at all, whatsoever. Thank you for listening. This is WXYC Chapel Hill, and this concludes today's episode of the Global Music Show.